Gerald Epstein. Welcome to KABU.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jerry Epstein is a very busy left economist, has done quite a few books, mostly for experts, and he also speaks, writes, engages in popular organizing, was interviewed for a recent article, Hiking Interest Rates Protects Financial Assets of the 1% at Workers' Expense. He teaches economics at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, where he's founding co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute, and he's a longtime staff economist for the Center for Popular Economics. Both do a great job of analysis and developing economic alternatives that support working people and increase their power. So, Jerry Epstein, inflation is the economic topic of the day. The Biden administration is doing several things trying to control today's inflation. But the main thing that impacts everybody, though in different ways, it's urging the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates, which they have done and appear committed to continuing. That's to stop inflation. My sense is, reading you and others, my sense is that that's the wrong cure in any circumstances, and especially now for today's inflation. Tell us why and what might be done today, and then we can discuss why raising interest rates has become the all-purpose solution.
Yes, inflation has become a huge political issue, and it is harming the livelihoods of many Americans. And so the government is trying to grapple with this partly because it's so politically costly for the Biden administration. The Fed, our central bank, has as one of its main targets, mandates, is to keep prices stable. And it feels particularly focused on trying to make sure that inflation is stable. The problem is, raising interest rates is the wrong tool for this kind of inflation. And if it raises interest rates, it threatens driving the economy into recession, raising unemployment, and harming the very people that it's supposedly trying to help. The way I teach this to my students is I tell them this. The libertarian economist Milton Friedman always said, inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. And he always thought that that meant that the problem was that the Federal Reserve created too much money. But we have to think about the second half of that sentence, too few goods. In this case, the problem is that there are too few goods being produced. So the Federal Reserve, when it raises interest rates, it's lowering the money supply, raising the cost of credit, reducing demand, but it's not doing anything to increase the amount and availability of the goods that we need. Now, when the Fed raises interest rates, first of all, it's worsening inflation because it raises the price of credit. You know, Wright Patman, who was a Democratic populist congressperson from Texas, always used to say, if the Fed raises interest rates, that's going to raise the cost of doing business, and that's going to worsen inflation. And in the first instance, he has a point. So how does raising interest rates possibly lower inflation? Well, it lowers inflation by making it too expensive to buy houses, to buy products, and leads to higher unemployment. And it really tries to lower inflation by restricting the power of workers to increase their wages and get decent working conditions. And by doing that, if it's the workers who are hurting from too high prices, it's actually hurting the workers rather than helping them. Now, why does the Fed do this? Well, to some extent, it's when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so the main tool that the Federal Reserve has is interest rates. And so it says, look, we have this inflation. We have this one tool. Let's raise interest rates. They don't take into account the fact that the problem of inflation is not too much demand, but not enough supply. And raising interest rates is just going to reduce supply even more. Worse, it takes a really long time for raising interest rates to lower demand. And you have to raise interest rates by a lot. Economic estimates are that you have to raise interest rates by 2 or 3 or even 4% to reduce inflation by 3 or 4% under normal circumstances. It would be even more now because this is mostly too few goods, that is, supply-side problems. So the Federal Reserve has the wrong tool it's using, and it has the wrong diagnosis of what the problem is. Now, the way it's doing it, I tell my students, you know, don't let the cure be worse than the disease. So by raising interest rates, making it harder for companies to borrow and produce more and increasing the cost of building new houses and so forth and throwing people out of work, you're making a cure that's worse than the disease. It's not the way to go. So I say to the Fed, don't just do something, sit there. That is, don't rush into these massive increases in interest rates that aren't going to work or going to be very costly if they do. And let's think about what else can be done to control this big increase in the cost of living? So what can be done? Well, first of all, we have to do something because there are millions of Americans who are seeing that the cost of necessities is going up dramatically, and it's really hurting them. The biggest increase is in energy prices have gone up 40% over the last year. Food prices have gone up 10 to 12%. Housing prices have gone up significantly and so forth. Many of these things, especially for working class and poorer people, are necessities, and they are creating lots of problems for people. So what can the government do to help these families? Well, first of all, there's been a bill put into Congress by Jamal Bowman, Democratic congressperson from New York, Ro Khanna, Democratic congressman from California, and Sheldon Whitehouse, Democratic senator from Rhode Island. And this bill says, look, the oil companies are making out like bandits. Their profits are going up tremendously. This is, in fact, a general problem right now. We're getting this massive profit push from these companies that are raising their prices as a result of this inflation. So they've estimated that these oil companies have gotten $90 billion in windfall profits. So what they're proposing is to tax some or all of that and just give it back to Americans or give it back to people in the United States to help defray the costs of their higher oil costs. This is a general kind of principle that ought to be followed. The government should increase its food support programs to give food subsidies to poor and working class people who are particularly harmed by this. It should increase rent subsidies to help the people who need help with rent. And it should do things to try to increase the supply side of products. So, for example, one of the problems we have is that the labor supply, there's a lot of job ads out there for workers and a lot of people who can't go out to work. Part of the problem is childcare. Childcare is so expensive that a lot of people need to stay home to take care of their children because the wages they're getting from their jobs aren't sufficient to cover the cost of childcare, even if they can find it, and sometimes they can't even find it. So the government should subsidize childcare and help create more opportunities for childcare. That's number one. Number two, there are supply problems at the delivery of products. So we don't have enough truckers to move all the products around. And a big problem there is trucking jobs that don't pay high enough wages. So trucking wages need to go up to help clear out this supply chain mess. So there are a number of things like that where the government needs to subsidize people so they can get over this short-term to medium-term problem and do things to make sure that there's more supply in the economy of the things that we really need. Now, the Federal Reserve, going back to where we started, actually has two tools of monetary policy. One is interest rates, but the second is buying financial assets. And the Federal Reserve has been buying trillions of dollars of financial assets, first during the great financial crisis of 2008-2009, and then again during the COVID crisis starting in March 2020. But what they've mostly been doing is buying financial assets from wealthy people, from banks and other financial services companies, essentially bailing out the financial system to the tune of $4 to $6 trillion. So what they could be doing instead is buying financial assets of companies that are trying to provide more or cooperatives, workers' cooperatives, communities, public banks, and so forth that are trying to create more food banks, more public transportation in cities, more childcare, and so forth. The Federal Reserve could be buying assets that would allow these kinds of supply things that I just talked about to increase. But instead, they're still just buying financial assets of the wealthy and raising interest rates on everybody else.
That was a really comprehensive look at the pressure on all working people and the need to find other ways of dealing with the supply side problem. Let me do a station ID first and reintroduction. I'm Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour on cable radio in Portland, Oregon. Talking to Jerry Epstein. He teaches economics at UMass Amherst, also co-directs the Political Economy Research Institute, and is a longtime staff economist for the Center for Popular Economics. We'll be talking about that at the end of the interview, the center. We've been discussing how raising interest rates to stop inflation greatly benefits the rich, which particularly those with precarious marginal incomes. Jerry, one issue that came to me reading your stuff and hearing you, my sense is that supply is not so much the cause, but It's an enabling condition. And what it enables is the corporations at almost every level of the economic system can raise their prices, and they raise their prices somewhat beyond the increased cost that they have to incur. And it seems to me that's the key to it, is capitalist behavior and corporate behavior. Like, let's say in housing. Housing prices have gone up so much in the last several years, not because the cost to the owners, and there are increased costs in construction because many of the companies beneath them, the material suppliers, have raised their prices. We're sort of sitting in a position where so many companies have really kind of monopoly control. They're not really having to compete with anybody. So they raise prices to where they can make a maximum income. At least that's my hypothesis.
Yes, that's an excellent point. A study by Servaas Storm and some people at the Economic Policy Institute call this profit push inflation. So they've shown that oligopolistic or monopoly power among corporations have allowed them to really increase their profit margins during this inflation, and that perhaps as much as 30% of the increase in prices or 30% of the inflation can be explained by this, what you just described, which they call profit push inflation. So, you know, if there's inflation going up a lot and people are blaming the Fed or people are blaming Biden or people are blaming the oil companies, well, why don't these companies get in on the game and just raise their prices even if the costs don't warrant it, because everybody's looking the other way. So I think what you said is this inflation partly enabling more inflation through these monopolistic practices is certainly true. There are, though, real supply constraints as well. And so I would say that both of those things are going on. There are a couple of points that I meant to make earlier and just want to quickly make. You asked, you know, why is the Fed so concerned about inflation? And you mentioned in your what you just said, that part of it is they want to protect the wealth of the wealthy and the bankers, and that's certainly true, that people who lend money and have a lot of financial assets, they, as a rule, do not like inflation because that erodes the real purchasing power of their wealth. And so the Fed has always been biased towards the banks and the wealthy people, so that's part of the reason why they put so much focus on inflation and not enough on employment. A second point, and this may relate to what we're going to talk about next, is that the Biden approach on oil prices seems to be completely wrong. He's trying to increase the more oil production, more fossil fuel production in order to drive down fossil fuel prices. But if we want to think really about a solution to this inflation, you know, we really don't want to forget the children. We don't want to forget the grandchildren. That is, we need to restrict the use of fossil fuels. We need high prices for fossil fuels so that we can make this transition to green energy. So rather than seeing this as a serious problem, we should see it as an opportunity. That is, an opportunity to create the incentives to have people move to electric vehicles, carpooling, public transportation, and so forth, and not try to get more fossil fuel production, more oil. Now, of course, there has to be a transition. That is, people are dependent on oil and gas, and it's very harmful for a lot of people who are so dependent. So once again, that's why this windfall profit tax is a good idea, to tax these profits of the oil companies, subsidize people so that they can afford to get to work and do what they need to do. But let's keep the price of oil high.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the climate. For quite a while, you know, I read some economic literature, I'm sort of a dilettante, and often I see the argument, it's a sort of a naked argument from the left, but the right engages in this claim too, that whatever the policy they're opposed to interferes with or reduces growth and gross domestic products, as if, in fact, the GDP, the gross domestic product, or just the growth figures, I guess that's the major one, is in itself a good thing. But in terms of the climate, I have always liked the line from David Suzuki, who's a very well-known, very popular, now he's aged out, but in his day, he drew huge crowds in his tours. He was really tireless, trying to talk about environmental destruction long before I even think Rachel Carson. Anyway, David Suzuki would say growth is the creed of the cancer cell. No, he said exponential growth is. But now we can't just rely on growth for well-being, because so much growth leads to so much increases in greenhouse gas pollution, which will, in fact, ultimately lead to a planet that's uninhabitable for humans or only for small bands. It seems to me, in a couple of sentences, even when they say growth, it should be said in a sort of in a context where it's good growth, and what you were suggesting, rather than just this sort of destructive increase in production and consumption for the aimless and always consuming more wealthy.
I completely agree with you. Growth, as is traditionally used by economists, is really obsolete now. And some economists have recognized that for a while. But what we need to make sure is that there is an expansion of opportunities for sustainable life on the planet, and those who have way too much and are harming the planet through their overconsumption need to cut back, and we need to leave more room in the global budget, carbon budget, if you will, for those who are impoverished and need to have, you know, the basics. So when thinking about dealing with a economic problem like inflation, as we were just talking about, what's clear is you don't solve that problem by worsening the existential crisis that we have of global climate change. You don't try to solve that problem by expanding the use of fossil fuels. You take the opportunity to reduce the use of fossil fuels. So it matters a lot that we don't think about growth as is traditionally defined by economists. We can think more along the lines of economist and sociologist Juliette Shore when she talks about true wealth, you know, true wealth being the social connections and a standard of living and leisure time and good health and community safety and so forth, not in terms of overconsumptions of goods and overwork. But of course, we have to recognize that there are many parts of the planet, many people, millions, billions of people on the planet who don't even have the basics. So we have to make this transition to a green economy. And as my colleague Bob Poland has written so eloquently about this, there'll need to be expansion of certain industries, green industries, retrofitting of buildings and so forth. While at the same time, there will be contraction of other industries, fossil fuels and so forth. And so whether the economy keeps growing or not in a traditional sense isn't really the issue. It's whether it expands these sustainable production, distributes it to people who need it, and creates true wealth for everybody.
Jerry Epstein teaches economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. He doesn't teach the dismal variety, however. Jerry, tell us about the Center for Popular Economics and how people can learn about their books and other stuff.
The Center for Popular Economics has been teaching activists and just regular people about economics as if people mattered since 1974, CPE, Center for Popular Economics, and it offers workshops and writes publications. You can find them on the web. Just Google Center for Popular Economics, CPE, and they're located in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Thanks a lot for talking to us, Jerry Epstein.
Thank you very much for having me.